If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Becca is the co-founder and executive director of Good Natured Learning, launched in Colorado and now collaborating with schools internationally, including in Kenya. With more than two decades in nature-based education, she has redesigned systems, led professional development, and integrated outdoor learning across public K-12 schools. Her work blends academic expertise with years spent leading wilderness expeditions around the world, fueling her commitment to equity, community, and authentic nature-based and nature-connected learning. Becca is dedicated to making nature-based learning both accessible and transformative for educators and students alike. Without further ado, Becca Katz. Hello, Becca Katz. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And you?
Great. Thank you again. You are here for a second time on our podcast, and you are growing. And just to let our listeners know that you are coming all the way from Kenya, and you've been doing and working since our last conversation with you on the show. You've been now growing in two continents since we last talked. So can we start with the big picture, and can you share maybe the why, the what, the how of good-natured learning?
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, just thank you so much for the opportunity to be back on the podcast. I'm really grateful to be here with you, and it was fun to be able to talk to you the first time, so I'm sure that this will be a fun conversation. To give you a little bit, or to give listeners a little bit of background on good-natured learning, we started in Colorado in 2022. And shortly after we started in Colorado, I moved to Kenya. But our work from the beginning has been about equipping educators to embed sustainable, meaningful, you know, bite-sized nature connections into the way that they teach, right? And so we call this approach apple a day, nature connections, right? An apple a day keeps the doctor away, an apple a day is good for our well-being, right? We say these small doses of, you know, something good add up to meaningful change. And so we're trying to equip educators to embed these small nature connections into their daily practice. And it really is across, you know, any subject area, any age group, any setting, any community, any curriculum. So, you know, when teachers or people ask us, what's your curriculum? I say, well, what's your curriculum? Because that is sort of where we start from, is whatever what curriculum a teacher or an educator is working with, that is a curriculum we're trying to elevate. And we're trying to sort of add on this enhancement of nature connection as a way to be delivering and also, you know, fostering all these other meaningful connections, including well-being benefits, right, that both teachers and students are getting, as well as the academic benefits for the subject matter they're covering, as well as for the emergent learning that always happens when you start particularly moving learning outdoors. And then on top of that, I think the planetary benefits of having people who are forming emotional connections with our Earth and who feel a sense of you know, affinity for it. And so then a desire to care for it. So these heart connections that can really start in schools. So that's like our orientation. And we started in Colorado. We are US-based nonprofit. And now we also operate in Kenya because I moved here shortly after we started. And you and I didn't meet until I had already moved to Kenya, I think.
I think that's right. I'm sort of hard to believe, but yes.
So a little bit about what we do, or, you know, what our approach is. So essentially, we are an educator professional development organization. And so we offer different capacity building programs. One is called our Teaching Outdoors program, and this is really a fundamental basic training where we go in for a day-long in-person workshop and really focus on the knowledge, the skills, and the attitudes for teaching outdoors. And again, we're using, you know, because you're hosting the Outdoor Classroom podcast, I think, you know, a lot of your teachers might be focused on like really deep nature connections, and we support and applaud those. And we also are focusing on anything just to deliver traditional curriculum in an outdoor context. So our Teach Outdoors program really does that. So high quality, standards aligned learning, moving outdoors. And so we do it in in-person workshop, and then that's followed up by a multi-week professional learning community where we have each teacher who's been in that workshop then put it into practice. And then we coach them through it, and we celebrate successes, and we also share challenges and how to overcome those challenges as a community moving through that professional learning community, and to really move it from sort of the one-day workshop where the binder ends up, you know, as a doorstop or whatever, into something where actually it's being put into practice. And so that's our, you know, that's our most basic offering. And then we offer a school year-long good-natured partnership. And that's a school-wide partnership where we're basically doing a lot of what we do in the Teaching Outdoors program, but we're actually trying to build up a couple of experts, so peer leaders within a school who are actually becoming the in-house experts who then carry the training and actually train their colleagues. And so it becomes this evergreen investment where there's actually people in the system who are now feeling sort of certified, so to speak. I know you do a certification, so that's an interesting and exciting addition for your program. And we're really trying to set people up similarly to feel really confident in this, and in a way where they can actually train their colleagues. So we do a train the trainer component in that, and then they actually deliver our Teaching Outdoors program with their colleagues. And then this is the sort of last piece of it. And honestly, there were some starting points of this in the United States before we moved here, and even since I've been in Kenya. But we do these things called outdoor learning collaborations. And really, it's about the fact that, you know, now I feel like we've identified that the three components you need to have successful outdoor nature-based education are you need the skills and the systems, which has really been Good Natured Learning's core expertise, but you also need the spaces. And we just now are starting to work in places that simply don't have abundant or at all access to nearby nature. And we're talking about, you know, safe and ideally inspiring nature spaces, even if it's just a pocket. And so because we're working now in some, you know, informal settlements, deeply urban places that don't have any of these spaces, what we have to do is first work with partners to stand up permaculture gardens. So we work with a partner called Harvesting for Good East Africa. They've put in these pocket gardens. We did one on a rooftop. We did one in like this tiny little pocket of land squeezed in between these buildings. And then we worked with another organization called Build Her that trains women fundis. Fundis are tradeswomen. They're like carpenters and builders. And they actually built these outdoor classrooms, all these women builders. And then we worked with a designer, Thomas Beth, who helped sort of kind of scope out like what are the concepts of these. And then we ended up pulling in an artisan who does upcycled artwork to do a mosaic with the students and the teachers at the school. So it became a really deep partnership to try to create the spaces first before we tried to activate, you know, before we trained in the skills and the systems, we needed the spaces first. So that's kind of an exciting new partnership. And there's shapes of that in the US, right? Where you see, you know about this, I'm sure from your work, but you know, there's outdoor classrooms that are sitting empty. And so sometimes they just need to be activated, right, for teaching and learning. And then there's also examples of places that are talking about building outdoor classrooms or putting in green schoolyards. And I think that that's a really great opportunity for us to get upstream and say, how can we co-create these spaces from the beginning with educators to actually have them be designed for teaching and learning in as much as they're designed for play, which I understand is also learning, but to be able to really say from the beginning that we are putting in these nature spaces with the intention of having them be really in service of what schools are trying to do. So these outdoor collaborations are like really fun new element. And yeah, so I'm pretty fired up about those.
Oh, incredible. I mean, it's incredible to have this start in Colorado, and there's a certain environment there, and then to be in Kenya in a completely different ecosystem. So working in these schools in these very, very different settings, from, yes, the mountains of Colorado to these informal settlements in Nairobi, what are some of the lessons learned? And how does nature-based learning look and feel across? I mean, you sort of described it, but it really, I just can't imagine. Can you describe that even more? Because I would love to dig deeper into that.
Yeah, I mean, it has been such a wild ride. And I think, you know, contextually, if anybody's on, you know, listening and wondering, like, why did they move to Kenya? We moved to Kenya. We moved to Kenya for my husband's work, right? And at first, for quite some time, I was in a situation where I was remotely operating an organization in the U.S. with my co-founder, who was on the, you know, really boots on the ground. But it was also really hard because I was in these, like, you know, 3 a.m. meetings with teachers, you know, virtual, and it felt really far away. And so at some point, just because I think that this is an important part of the story, at some point, my husband said to me, you know, you really like being where you are, like, couldn't you just do good natured learning in Kenya? And I was really conscious of, like, oh, I do not want to be this, like, lady who comes in from the outside and, like, tells Kenyan educators what they should or shouldn't be doing. Like, that's not my place, and this isn't my culture and my community. And so I was really fortunate I went back to one of our funders for the work in Colorado, and I said, you know, I'd like to see if people are interested in this work here, because I want to start from asking, so sharing what we're doing and then seeing if it resonates with people in Kenya. And that funded what I would call, like, a discovery tour, where I was going to be having conversations with people and, you know, visiting schools and kind of getting a sense for whether or not it made sense here. And my third conversation was with just this incredible seasoned Kenyan educator named Mildred Obuya. And she listened to what we were doing in the U.S. and she said, well, I mean, you should just do that here. I mean, more or less, right?
Wow.
She was really no nonsense about it. And she really, like, helped kind of get us off the ground here in terms of, like, okay, here are educators that want to work with you in your program. So she helped sort of field the first cohort of what we call the Good Natured Partnership now. And that's how we launched here. But what it's allowed is, in that first cohort of teachers, we had teachers, and since then, in the schools that we've been able to work in, we've worked with schools ranging from, you know, a school in an informal settlement where there's one teacher with over 70 students under a single tree, all the way to schools that are, like, really prestigious, you know, private international schools.
Wow.
That, you know, 36 acre campuses with 11 acres of indigenous forest, like, on the campus, right? So who have, you know, those teachers have, like, 15 students, right? So the settings are wildly, wildly divergent. And then the mountains of Colorado, right? Both urban and rural settings in Colorado. And I think what's been so interesting is that, you know, I always believed that human nature connections were universal. I think we know this. This is human, 200,000 years of evolution in and with nature. Like, we are deeply connected to more than human nature. And what's been so interesting is seeing how resilient these, like, bite-sized apple a day nature connections, like, the methodology has been across settings. And so what I will say is, we've now worked with over 500 teachers, all the way from, right, this teacher with the 70 kids under a tree in an informal settlement in Nairobi, all the way to the mountains of Colorado. And across the board, the outcomes, the impacts are the same. There's a universality on that level in terms of, like, they see their students are calmer, their students are more engaged, their students are happier. And then they, as teachers, they feel better. They are enjoying their job more. They feel more motivated. They feel more creative as educators. And then truly, we see examples of growing love for nature, right? Like, actual, I've had teachers who say, I never paid attention to, you know, the birds or, like, the plants on my walk to work. And now I do, right? Or we just did a cloud watching exercise where we sat outside and it was, you know, it was social emotional learning, right? It was, like, the mental health space of just taking a moment to breathe and watch the clouds, but then also, like, the appreciation for these things that are bigger than you and outside of you. And So that has been, for me, the most stunning thing is that, yes, human nature connections are universal, and that these bite-sized apple a day doses applied in very different settings yield the same results. I mean, to the point where, like, if I gave you a stack of cards that said, these are testimonials from teachers, sort them, you know, they're Kenya or Colorado, try to sort them affluent or under-resourced school, try to sort them based on private or public school, rural or urban, and I asked you to sort them based on the testimonial alone of what they saw in their students and what they saw in themselves, you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your outdoor learning collaboration at, is it SHOFCO?
SHOFCO, yeah. We got to partner, so this is that last project that I was talking about a little bit. We got to partner with this brilliant organization called SHOFCO, Shining Hope for Communities, that has existed for, I think that they're going on 20 years as an NGO. They are just a really amazing entity. And we got to partner with them. They started some girls' leadership academies. And so they run two all-girls schools, one in Mathare and one in Kibera, which are two large informal settlements in Nairobi. These two schools have been around for, I think, over a decade each. I actually don't know the full length of time for these schools, but we got an opportunity through a really amazing partnership also with a school in the United States called the Chapin School, which is in New York. And that school is a sister school to these Girls Leadership Academy. So that relationship, you know, has existed for a long time. And they were coming out and bringing some students and some teachers from the Chapin School out to Nairobi as like a experience of like there's just an exchange going on ongoing between these two schools. And they said, oh, we'd really like to do a project. And I got connected to that project through a lot of really like beautiful stars aligning, amazing humans in the world who in hearing about what we were doing and knowing what they were trying to do said, you know, would it be possible to do some sort of a project together? And, you know, that was when I sort of grappled with this question of like, oh, we've focused on sort of equipping educators with the skills and building the systems in schools to support outdoor learning specifically, but nature-based education in general, sort of by working, training teachers. But what happens when we do that in a place that doesn't already have some nature, right? Like, it's one thing to do that in a school that has like a forest adjacent to the school, even if it's not a formal outdoor classroom, like you can make that into an outdoor classroom. And, you know, you are very practiced at guiding people on how to sort of be scrappy and resourceful with what they have. But this is a different level of sort of scrappiness and resourcefulness that you would be asking of people. And so we sort of looked at the situation. I said, oh, well, we really need to stand up some nature spaces before we can train the teachers. I realized that we were out of our skill, out of our expertise area, right? Like, I like gardens, but I would not call myself an expert gardener. And I like trees, but I wouldn't call myself a forester. And I like structures that support, you know, nature-based learning, like a pergola or other things. I wouldn't call myself a builder. And so I, you know, we really realized that we needed some partners. And so we ended up pulling together a variety of different local partners here in Nairobi. Harvesting for Good East Africa. It's founded by this incredible woman, Sheena Shawarishki, who they just already specialize in doing regenerative permaculture, agriculture in pocket settings, on balconies, on rooftops, in, you know, tiny little plots in urban settings. And so they became a really logical partner to help us put in a garden on the 6-story rooftop of one of these schools. And so we hauled a lot of compost and a lot of soil up 6 stories. And then bringing in Build Her, this amazing social enterprise organization here, where there are very few women who work in construction industries, I think, world over. In Kenya, that is also true. And so this organization was founded to train women to be builders in the trades. And so these graduates came out and we got a team from Build Her to actually build the structures. So they put up a pergola at each site. So that's like, but out of like bamboo, and it's just really simple structures. And then we put up some rooftop classrooms at both the schools, rooftops that were not, you know, pockets of the rooftop that they could allocate that weren't being used, that we were able to put up It's called Mabati, this like corrugated metal rooftop. And I'll have to send you some pictures so that people can at least see this.
We will have to have you back and do an outdoor classrooms tour and talk. That would be so fun. In our membership community. Absolutely incredible. I'm envisioning it and it's just mind boggling in terms of looking at a space and there's no real nature. There's sort of not much to work with. But I love this. The image that came to my mind as you were speaking was one of like a web that you are really, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, but just pulling these people in as resources that, and really speaking to the story of we can't do this alone, that we really need to reach out to our community and pull these experts in. And I feel like that's what your role is. And being who you are and good-natured learning is pulling this web together and making it work, but internationally, like it's just mind-boggling. It's so exciting to just have this whole incredible other cultural piece that is so different than what we know here in the United States. There you are just making it happen.
I think that's what's so interesting is like, you know, I think like necessity is the mother of invention, right? Like I've always really, that's always resonated with me. There are many adages that I don't necessarily resonate with, but that one has always stuck out as like, yeah, you just kind of figure it out. And I think our orientation as an organization has always been one of, I mean, I use the word scrappy all the time. I think some people don't, but I like that word because I feel like we're really resourceful and we kind of look and we're like, okay, what are the assets on the ground? What are the constraints on the ground? And like, that's the space that we're in. And we're trying to maximize, like, what's the best thing we can make happen given the assets and constraints that we have. And I think in particular, what was so cool. And, you know, I don't think you can ever kind of predict like how all these different pieces will fall into place, but in partnership with, you know, there were other partners too, like Mr. Dudu is this artisan, this local artisan who, you know, he runs like an after school club at my kids' forest school, right? So that's how I know him. We did a design workshop with the teachers at the beginning of this outdoor learning collaboration. And in that workshop, we gave them 10 minutes and colored pencils and we said, and clipboards and paper. And we said, draw your dream outdoor classroom. And this teacher named Simon, who is an art teacher at one of the schools, drew this beautiful picture of an oak tree with kids sitting on tree stumps circled around it and a chalkboard on the tree. And you know, that was his dream outdoor classroom that he drew in 10 minutes. He was an art teacher, so he's a bit of a ringer, but it was a really beautiful drawing. And, you know, I thought about it and I was like, gosh, like we probably can't put a tree on the rooftop that's like a full grown oak tree, like on the rooftop. But, you know, what could we do? And I thought about this guy, Mr. Dudu, Patrick, and I said, you know, Kibe, he goes by Kibe. I said, Kibe, would you be able to do a mosaic that like is this image as a mosaic? And he was like, I love that idea. And so that's what we ended up, that was the design, was this like this teacher's drawing became the design for this wall-sized mosaic that is, that had the chalkboard literally mounted in the middle of it because it's the middle of the teaching wall in this classroom. But then around it is a tree and butterflies and flowers all made with like broken tiles and glass and other things that are all upcycled materials. And then the students from that school in New York and the students from Kibera School for Girls and Mathare School for Girls, the Shofko schools here, and teachers actually put up the mosaic, you know, together, which was really a beautiful cross-cultural collaboration and other things. But I think what's been so stunning about the way every single partner just showed up was just that, like, not only did we recognize we can't do this on our own, like we've got to pull in some other people, but it was this really, really beautiful illustration of the whole being greater than the sum of its parts, right? Because none of us would have been able, like if we had just done the training without those spaces, it would have been meaningless and tone deaf. To be frank, like for us to train about nature-based education in a place where there wasn't this nature access. But then, you know, the gardens had just been put in without then training the educators to like be really engaging with the gardens as learning spaces. And by the way, they also do training on how to maintain and support and sustain those gardens so they are flourishing. I mean, these gardens are, you know, they're pouring out produce right now. Like, you know, they're sending the produce home with students from families that are really high needs families. And so those families are getting nourishment from this project too, in these ways that you just like, you can't see it all coming. But I think it's been just watching, you know, these women from Build Her, watching them like in their expertise, but then also like, it just so happened that these were all girls' schools. And so these little girls are seeing these women, just like powerful women building these structures, you know, at their school. And so there was just this other layer that was unlocked in terms of like aspirations and sort of seeing like what they could do and opening up a whole new career that probably wasn't one that had been typically presented to them as a pathway for them. And I think it's just been really amazing to see how everyone has brought their best in this like true trust that like it all is so like complementary and supportive of each part of the system. And so it's been a super fun project.
Incredible. You've just answered my last question, which was the impact and the domino effect. And so what I'm hearing and seeing is just you've really built this incredible, I mean, since we last talked, the momentum is immense. So I understand that you're planning to bring this outdoor learning collaborations to 10 more schools in 2026. Is that what I'm hearing?
We shifted our goal to 12, but yes. We were like, well, what about like one a month? I mean, you know, it remains to be seen if we'll be able to bring in the resources we need to do this, because obviously the stuff, the nails cost money, the lumber, the labor costs money, all of it takes resources to do. But I think in terms of model, we will only get better and better at how to have all, I mean, these were two simultaneous and fairly bananas paced projects. Like we did that design workshop with teachers on February 4th. Of 2025, and we were planting the gardens. So and the outdoor classrooms, I didn't even meet Build Her or Harvesting for Good East Africa until after that design workshop.
Wow.
And then I met them in late February, and then they came on site in late February. And then in March, in like 3 weeks in March, the building team, the Build Her women, stood up these outdoor spaces, like the garden structures and the outdoor classroom spaces, like the frames and stuff. And then on March, I think it was like 19th and 20th, like these kids from New York were coming. So we like had to be ready with all the soil and all the seedlings and all the paint and all the everything. And so then we had these two joyful days where we really planted and painted and decorated and put up the mosaic and everything. And then we trained the teachers in April. There was like a school break in April. Wow. And that May, when the students came back, they were using them.
Wow.
So like it was a 4 month.
That's mind-boggling. It is bananas. I love that expression.
and so I think like if we do 12 schools this year, you know, it might be that like we start one in January and then we start two in February and three in March, or I don't know what it will look like, but
the ripple effect. I mean, it's just I think the more you do it, the more you just jump in. It's serendipitous. It's the right people show up in the right place in the right time. And I love how it's even the New York kiddos are coming to you. They're actually coming to Kenya. So they're physically doing.
I mean, that was like this long-term partnership that's been going on. And I think that the actual Chapin has been sending students, I think, 3 years, maybe.
Wow.
This might be 3 years. And so they've done a project every year, and this just got to be the project in 2025, which was, you know, such a gift. And so that exchange was already built. And so we weren't making that. We were just sort of like providing something rich for everybody to engage with while those students were here. And, you know, and Chapin, you know, funded the project. So that's an important piece of the puzzle for sure, was that they saw value in it and they thought, okay, this will be a really meaningful way for our students to engage and a meaningful long-term project for the school too.
And you think of just the impact of every single child that's involved in that and that experience that they had and what you mentioned before and what they're walking away with. It's just, it's mind-boggling. So finally, your work is rooted in joy, curiosity, and connection to other people and with more than human nature. What advice would you give to our educators and all those who are listening to begin bringing nature into their teaching, even in urban and or resource limiting settings that you've been talking about?
The number one thing I would say is that no matter how small it feels, it really matters. It matters that you're doing it. And so I think there's so much pressure on educators to be doing so many different things. And I think oftentimes there's this perspective of like, oh, I'm not outdoorsy enough, or I'm not, you know, I don't know enough of the names of the plants, or I don't know, you know, what all the animals are in the area. Or, you know, as educators, we, you know, might sort of self-eliminate from being able to engage with this. And I think the lesson I have is that, like, I've seen teachers do just like really, really, really basic things and have profound outcomes from those. And so I think recognizing that, one, it's okay to be wherever you are, and that, like, just giving something a try and having it be small matters. And then I think, too, that, like, your knowledge and your skill and your confidence will grow the more that you do it. And so it is these, like, it is an apple a day. And it doesn't have to be that you are like, okay, now I'm going to, like, start a forest school, you know, tomorrow. Like, that's a totally intimidating task that, like, very few people would be successful doing, right, immediately, you know, sort of overnight. But overnight, like, could you get some plants inside your classroom? Yeah, you probably can. You know, can you take your students for a short walk where they collect nature objects for your factoring exercise in math class instead of having, and you can do the exercise indoors or outdoors, but instead of having them do it with plastic manipulatives in your class, like, I think most teachers can pull that off. And I think that they'll see really meaningful benefits. So I think it matters. And I'll mention one story that I think on the factoring thing, because I think that that's such a, like, lovely example because it's so simple. There was a fourth grade teacher in Colorado who was teaching factors of 24, and she had her students gather 24 nature objects. So 24 sticks, leaves, stones, whatever. And then they made 8 groups of 3 and 3 groups of 8 and 6 groups of 4, and, you know, kept doing the same exercise they would have been doing. They did it outdoors once they went on the walk, and then they did the exercise actually outdoors. And, you know, she had been teaching this content for, you know, more than a decade. And she said, yeah, like, they learned the content just as well as they had in previous years. She said, but they were calmer and I felt better. And I was like, okay, you know, that's the answer. You know, I think it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be this big thing. And no one has to, like, give you permission to do this. Like, it's good pedagogy. And if it makes you feel better, if it makes your students feel better, like, you know, I think just doing something small and knowing that that matters and is meaningful is a really great place to start.
Yeah, I can't say enough. And thank you for that. I have to do a shout out to Jody Simpson, who is a graduate of your program in Colorado and has become a member of our Circle community, which has just been, she's just a beautiful human.
Yeah, I mean, Jody's like such a perfect articulation. It's so fun, actually. Jody came from a small school district in rural Colorado, and our model with the Good Natured Partnership, which is what Jody did, is to have ideally at least 2 educators from a given school, or if it's a small district, you know, from that district. And in their case, it was her, and then her partner was this guy, Mike Munoz, who's actually on our board of directors, right, for Good Natured Learning. He's a high school teacher. And what I love, love, love about them as a pair from their district is that, you know, here you have a kindergarten teacher and a high school science teacher, and they were put in the same cohort. And again, when I say it's agnostic to content, it, you know, it's agnostic to age group, to setting, et cetera. Like, they both taught at schools with really different assets in terms of nature. They both taught in, you know, different age groups, different content areas, et cetera. And they, you know, have just, like, become great buddies and collaborators. And I think also just seeing them each, like, even before we had, you know, we're doing work in Kenya, we were already seeing, like, those are already wildly divergent settings, right? A high school teacher and a kindergarten teacher, like, those are different worlds in many, many ways. But what we see is that they can both build nature connections into their work to meaningful ends, both serving the academic goals and the well-being goals, but also these, like, you know, the affinity for nature goals. And so it's been cool to see them as a team, because they're a fun duo.
Yeah. All I'm thinking and feeling now and hearing all your stories and what you're doing is just this incredible ripple effect. But it's more than ripples. It's like waves. I'm just seeing it's really, really exciting to learn what you're doing and how many people that you're impacting, not only, but the also setting that up in such a way that it's sustainable, which is so you're really training the teachers to create this energy with and momentum within their schools. So I want to thank you for that. That is just absolutely amazing. Did you want to share any last stories? Or I know that you were on a TED Talk, if I'm correct about that, but any last thoughts before we head out?
Yeah, TED Talk will be available hopefully within the next month or so, but there's been a little bit of a delay in getting the videos out, which was a really fun experience, was to share, think about the work and thinking about it in this like global holistic storytelling way. I think one thing I would just mention about the sustainability comment, since you mentioned that, is just I know based on hearing teachers that have worked with you speak in their, in their direct testimonials of their experience, is that once this is truly owned by a teacher or by a school, right, which is like what we're doing, like these school wide, and eventually we're hoping to do like district wide and system wide change, right? My dream would be that this is adopted into the national model in Kenya. It's a little easier here in terms of like there is a national model, whereas like in the US there's like 13,000, more than 13,000 school districts. So it's a little bit of a more complex puzzle to solve there. But I think conceptually, I think the point is that this can be happening in every single, school on the planet, and every educator can do it, and it's going to look infinitely different ways. But what I would shout out is that once a teacher really embraces this, or once an educator, an administrator really embraces it, you just see the sustainability is so strong, because, I'll give examples from the Girls Leadership Academies with Shofco. The head teachers at the schools are a woman named Redempta and another woman named Rachel. And they're just incredible school leaders, right? And I remember a conversation with Redempta early on, before we had done the training. I think she just kind of understood what we were talking about. She just seemed to get it always. But I said something like, Redempta, my dream is that, they have 320 some kids at each of these schools, right? And so one or two outdoor classrooms, we ended up building two outdoor classrooms at each school. So all the students can't be in those outdoor classrooms at the same time, right? But I said, my dream is that you just create a schedule where every teacher gets to be in these spaces at least for an hour a week, so that they, so that every kid is getting some of this exposure and every teacher is getting some of this exposure. And Dumpta just looked at me and she said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. it was just so simple, but she just baked it into the formula. And so did Rachel, right? They baked it into the formula of their schedule. And so now if you go back there, right, these classrooms are, it's not like, okay, we finished the training in May and they started and they were really excited about it. It's like, no, they're like, just you, like that is part of their school now. And they use these spaces. And then, I had, this is a fun little story, but I had a conversation with the education director whose office is in one of these schools. And she said, I hope it's okay, but, some of us actually go and we work in the outdoor classrooms when they're not in use. Because, they're just, really nice spaces, Yeah. And I said, that's okay, that's fabulous. Of course, it feels really good to be in those spaces. So I think that sustainability piece is, teachers are really, really, really incredible humans. And when you look at Jody, or you look at, Rachel or Redempta or any of these, amazing educators I've gotten to work with here or in Colorado or anywhere, when they embrace it, they can just make this part of it. And then they're impacting, year after year after year after year of students. They get new students every year. And so there's sustainability built into that too. Uh-huh. And all the students that are in their care getting to have that nature connection. I think that's really important about the way you approach your work too, in terms of really empowering these educators to own that and just have it be part of their practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness, I could talk to you all day long. That's fascinating.
I mean, it's really fun to be able to reconnect with you. And, I'm grateful for what you're doing to just elevate the importance of this work. I think the more voices and the more people that are doing this, the better off we are. And we're all, I think, approaching it in, different ways, all of which I think are really complement. And I think, again, to the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. I like to think that we are all adding up to something really meaningful in terms of a movement, right?
It is a movement. And I think I sort of see it as a potluck. I think we all bring our own way of doing it, our own way of thinking, but I think it all complements, and it's all what we bring to the table, or a quilt, or we're sewing this huge global quilt together, which means we need to talk to each other and tell each other these stories. And I think that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast, was so we can capture these incredible, incredible stories. And then that's a ripple effect of, oh, wow, they can do that, I can do this. So your work is beautiful.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Likewise, the feeling's mutual. I'm really impressed and inspired by what you are creating in the world. And yeah, grateful to be in the movement with you. So
yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our community, here's how you can get involved. First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time. It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time,